Hello, and thank you for listening to Address Unknown. This is episode 31, and today we are going to be talking about our time in Ecuador, which ended up being a lot darker and more off the grid than we ever expected it to be.
Hey there, welcome back. As Jonica said, this is Address Unknown, and in this episode, we'll be talking about the time we spent in Ecuador. However, before we get to the country of Ecuador, we want to talk about the travel day from hell.
We alluded to this in the very end of the last episode.
Probably the worst travel day that we have had thus far in the 15 months we've been traveling. We knew this day was going to come, or these days, frankly. We thought it was probably going to happen more than once or twice.
That's true.
We knew it was going to come, but you can never really, really prepare for the turmoil and emotional distress that it'll bring.
Yeah, I mean, we woke up bright and early to head to the airport in Cusco to catch our flight to Lima. And this is one of those times where we actually had a tight turnaround. So we should have just known. Right then and there that we were doomed, right? Because we don't usually book a tight turnaround, but we're like, you know what? It's not far. It'll be fine. So anyway, the tight turnaround was to get us from Lima to Guayaquil, where we were only going to be staying two nights, but we had splurged with points.
We spent a lot of points on this hotel.
To stay at a very nice hotel because there's not a lot in Guayaquil. And Guayaquil is actually kind of dangerous.
It is, if I'm not mistaken, Ecuador's second largest city. It is like a financial hub, and it's super sketchy.
Yeah. So we got this beautiful hotel that had a pool and a fabulous gym. We were very excited.
There was a lot of money spent on Chase credit cards to get the points for this hotel for two nights. Yeah. We really were like, this is a big spend on points, but like it's worth
it.
We
were so excited. But of course, the universe had other plans for us. So we're getting in our cab to head to the airport in Cusco. And I think I'm walking out the door of the hotel. You were getting in the cab with the guy with the bags.
Yep.
And I'm walking out. I was like, Farber. I was like, they literally just canceled our flight. So Cusco, not big, right? Like you don't have to leave a long time before your flight departs. So for them to notify us as we're walking out the door.
It was 2 hours before takeoff.
Like, come on, guys. Like, we were supposed to be at the airport.
Yes.
At that point. Time. Yes. So anyway, so we get to the airport. Our 7:10 a.m. flight was gone. And luckily for us, we've been rebooked on a 6 p.m. flight.
Nothing like a 12-hour layover time.
Yeah, nothing. In like the world's largest airport with so many opportunities. So we went to the airport because we obviously had just checked out. We tried to get on an earlier flight because, as we said, there are flights from Lima to Cusco every 15 to 30 minutes. So there is no reason in my mind that we could not have been booked on an earlier flight than 6 o'clock p.m. But we got to the desk and they're like, no, that's what we can do for you. And we're like, okay, well then that means that we're missing our connection from Lima to Guayaquil. And they're like, okay, so here's what's going to happen. You're going to get to Lima. We're going to put you up in a hotel. And then the next morning, you're going to wake up, go back to the airport and fly to Guayaquil. So that means we're going to miss night one of our
amazing
stay.
Points hotel.
And we're going to have to like have zero sleep essentially because please hold our reservations. We'll be there. We will arrive. But honestly, by the time we got to Lima, it was what? 9 o'clock, I think, is when we landed.
The turnaround time made no sense. We were like, we landed about 9 p.m. and we were due to fly out less than 12 hours later.
Because we also stood in line in the Lima airport because we had to like get our hotel accommodations
That's right.
All this shit. And as we've talked about, nothing moves quickly, right? Or efficiently. So we get to the desk.
Well, they also weren't going to put us up at the Intercontinental. And so we're like, we know what kind of hotel you're going to put us in. We're going to get 4 hours of sleep.
Bed bugs.
This is not happening. No. Like, we're like, no. What can you do?
So we get to the desk and I'm like, yo, please, like, is there any flight going out tonight that will just get us to Quito? Because it doesn't make sense at this point for us to go and spend less than 12 hours in Guayaquil and just get us to Quito. We'll stay in Quito one more night. We had to beg and plead. Like, they weren't going to do it.
No.
And we're like, y'all, like, just please. And they're like, okay. There's a flight leaving at 1 a.m. You can get on this flight and it'll take you directly to Quito. And so that's what we did. We got on that 1 a.m. flight.
We skipped Guayaquil altogether and never actually went to our hotel that we paid for two nights with the pool, yeah, with the gym, all in points.
Did not, nope. And ended up getting to our hotel in Quito around 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. So it was we were in transit for literally 24 hours. I think I might have slightly started to cry in Lima, the airport lounge in Lima.
We were in the club for probably 7 hours.
Both clubs.
Yeah. Luckily, we had the opportunity again, and we've talked about this again. People know my opinion of the credit card and the club and all this nonsense or the lounge, but we...
How many times has this paid off for you?
We spent that entire day in two different lounges, and because they only let you check in generally about 3 hours before your flight departs. Like, they don't let you spend all day there because you're going to eat and drink and lounge and use Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So we were really lucky. They never messed with us. Mm-mm. But we spent... From 7 when we got there, 7 a.m., mm-hmm, until we departed at 6 p.m., we spent the majority of that time in two lounges.
And this is going to make me sound bougie, but this was not the Delta Lounge at LAX where I could go and take a shower.
They didn't have showers.
And, like, lay down.
They didn't even have hot food at this place.
There wasn't even anything I could eat, I don't think, at either lounge. And the last lounge, like, what, you could get one drink, I think, with your boarding pass,
yes,
and then you had to pay for them?
Yes.
Oh, I was pissed. I was so pissed.
Anyway, that was one of those things we had anticipated. In fact, if you go back to episode one of this fucking podcast, we probably talked about, there's going to be some terrible travel days.
Oh, we knew this would happen.
This was one of those days. And luckily, it didn't happen for months and months and months, a year. But it certainly happened. And it was no less impactful and emotional for us.
It's still a lot. You lose some money. You lose some points. You lose your sanity. But we made it. We made it to Quito.
So here we are. We land, as Jonica said, 5 in the morning. We go through customs. We take the cab to our hotel in Quito. And it's the middle. It's maybe not even 5. Maybe it's 4. It's pitch black. It's the middle of the night.
Can I just say really quickly, I feel like this is where my account management style kicked in. Because we're in the lounge in Lima. And I was like, I got to contact the hotel in Quito. We have to book another night. Like, we need an additional room, right?
Yeah. Let's back up. We booked it the next day. So we were coming in a day before.
Yeah.
That's true.
So I was like, hey, are you around? Can we get a room for one more night? I booked a driver for us because I was like, there's no way that we're landing at 5 a.m. after all this shit. And I booked it all.
You know
what? The world's best personal assistant.
You know what this means? I think you can take the cat out of the jungle, but you can't take the jungle out the cat. Jonica went straight back into account mode.
I did.
Solved all the driving situations for us, solved the hotel situation for us, got us. So if I go back to my intro here,
we're
coming into Quito in the car. There's no lights on. It's dark. It's the middle of the night. We think this, okay, whatever. We're out of it mentally anyway. We're sitting here explaining to the driver, oh my God, we've had this travel day from hell. It's been crazy. We're mentally unstable at the moment. Anyway, he's like, you guys, welcome to Quito. We arrive, we're in front of the hotel, and this is a small family-run place. It's a former home, actually, like a large, we'd call it like a mansion, really, but it's a home. It's got 8 to 10 hotel rooms in it.
It looked like a riad.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. From the center
Morocco
had like a garden in it with like a seating area and a mm-hmm fountain.
It's beautiful.
So the first person that greets us is this maintenance / security person. Mm-hmm. And he comes to the entrance of the door. And you got to remember, it's dark. There's no sound. Nothing's happening. And he comes and he greets us. So he's got a flashlight and he's like, hey, welcome to the hotel. None of this is in English. She doesn't
mm-mm
speak in English.
Mm-mm.
But we get the impression, you know, bienvenido. Great. We're coming. We're welcome to the hotel. There is no power. He said, no loose. There is no power. And we said, oh, this makes sense. It's South America. This happens from time to time.
Well, and it was funny, too, because I remember by the airport, there were streetlights. And then the closer we got to the old town, all of a sudden there was nothing. And I remember seeing people walk to the bus stations, and it was pitch black. And maybe that's just how it is here. I don't really know.
All right, so let's just quit foreshadowing here. So the lack of power is due to a drought that had started, from what we understand, in November of 2024. Okay? And the country relies entirely on hydroelectric power. So therefore, without the rain, without the flowing rivers, there is literally no way to generate power. We asked everyone during our time in Ecuador, what about solar? What about
wind? Lots of sun, guys, lots of sun.
And they told us that basically the government has control over the hydroelectric plants, and that's why they're not willing to entertain any other sources of renewable energy.
Well, because they're in the pockets, right, of like the guys who built all these hydroelectric plants. So it's corruption through and through.
Right. So,
and the poor, like the whole country suffers because of it.
So what do you do in this circumstance? Well, like most of the Ecuadorians have learned to do, we tolerated the situation to the best we could. This means that there are regular blackouts that occur 4 to 8 hours a day, often exceeds these numbers. It can be 10 hours. It can be 12 hours. It's not an exact science.
There was never one that was only 4 hours a day. Never.
We were told that there is a website that you can go to, which lays out for, I believe it's like the next 48 hours, the scheduled blackouts. We never saw the website. And every time a like business owner, like for example, the proprietor of our hotel would be like, hey, the power is going to go out at 8 a.m. today. It's going to come back on at 1. That didn't really happen.
It was never right.
It was sort of goes off before 8, maybe after 8, and vice versa. It comes back on around 1, maybe 2 or 3. We don't know. Really, the businesses can continue to run. So restaurants can operate off of propane tanks. Large institutions had generators. So banks had generators. And some small shops had gas power generators. But these things are humming and hawing all day when there's no power. So if you think, like, you're a self-employed digital nomad, anybody who needs to use a computer without interruption throughout the day, you cannot operate. You just can't, because you don't know when the power is going to shut off. We got used to charging our devices when the power was on. So especially things like phones, headlamps, external batteries, we became pretty familiar with it within like 48 hours. We're like, we have to plan for this.
You just try to be on airplane mode as much as you can, because you never know also if you're going to be back at the hotel when you can be charging your device. So yeah. That was also the thing. Not that it mattered, because what, the power goes out, what are you going to do with it? Like, you don't, it's useless anyway.
I think, the takeaway on the whole power thing here, and we'll go on about this in the podcast, but we just felt for the people who were trying to run a business or trying
live
to improve
life.
Their lives. You're looking at this and you're like, everyone, this is not laziness. Like, people are trying to, like, they're trying to go to work. They're trying to get at the bus station on time. And nothing works. Like, the display for when the bus is going to come doesn't work. So you don't know if you're going to get to work on time. Just imagine you're in a developing country, and that's very much what Ecuador is, and you're trying to really improve your lot in life, and that you can't because something as basic as electricity is not provided for you. On a lighter note, we were staying in Quito's old town, which is close to several walk-in plazas, churches, and markets. The Basilica del Voto Nacional, which is also just the National Basilica of Quito.
Beautiful. Massive.
It's the city's main church. It towers over the city. And facing our first powerless day of our trip in Quito, we decided we might as well go explore the Basilica del Voto, it's sort of a must-see when in town. It's gothic in design. It's massive. It looks mildly similar to Notre Dame in Paris, I guess.
Yeah,
it's gothic. It has the same architecture and form. With huge stained glass windows. It's about 2 or 3 stories high on the inside. It's very, very large. Maybe more. Maybe that's an understatement.
I think like the walkable part is probably 3 stories, but obviously like the towers and everything go very, very high. But...
Right. And then there's one very large spire at the back of the church that they let people go up into it if you want to make that adventure.
God.
So if you're not afraid of heights like Jonica, and you're not scared to ascend the small rickety metal steps that shake as you're walking up them, you can go up into this spire, and it's literally maybe 8 feet in diameter. And once you're up there, and you're enclosed, meaning not in the sense of like European church, like where there's windows and glass and rails, you're just in the spire itself. And there's 360-degree views of Quito. It's awesome. Jonica didn't do it. She was scared.
I did not at all. And the other thing, of course, in classic Latin America fashion, this dad comes up there with his wife as well, but their small child who is maybe 2 to 3 years old, and she kind of starts crawling up these stairs, which I myself would not even set foot on these stairs. And the dad promptly swoops her up and just like carries her up these things. And it's hard enough to walk there as like a single person. And nope, didn't matter. Just bring that baby straight up this rickety, death-defying staircase to the very tippy top of the church.
It was kind of like an old like kid who has a tree fort, and there's a ladder that you're like, this ladder could break at any time. Felt like that. And as you're going up, even I like heights. I like adventure. I wasn't even, not even looking down going up these things because it was so high. It's on top of the church itself, and then you're going up to the spire. Anyway.
It was terrifying.
It was terrifying.
After that, though, too, I don't think we have this in here, but I'm just going to like add in. Remember we walked to that restaurant? We were trying to find somewhere to eat. And we're wandering around because also that's a challenging thing to do when the power is out. Like what restaurants are open? What food is going to be okay and not make you sick? Remember we ended up in the courtyard of that restaurant and there was no one there. And we sat down, we ordered our food. Huge. I got like huge plate of chicken. You got something else. And then all of a sudden we look as we're about to end the meal and there's a massive line of people.
Oh, yeah. We went there twice.
Yeah. We ended up going there twice because it was like basically the most popular
really
restaurant.
Affordable and really, really good.
It was good in Quito. And we just happened to be like the gringos that stumbled upon it, which was incredible. And our server was amazing.
Don't remember the name of this place, but yeah.
Don't. But it was great. It was great.
Day one in Quito was a success. We went to bed that evening. The next day, after having breakfast at the hotel, on the rooftop, which was also, because it was like a mom-pop operation. They had all these tchotchkes and stuff. There was a great breakfast place to enjoy. They traveled all over the world and collected like little trinkets.
Oh my God.
It was a great breakfast place.
It could have been a museum.
Yeah. We were making our way to Park La Carolina, which is a large urban park in the middle of the city. But before we arrived at the park, we wanted to visit this La Mariscal artisanal market, which I had looked up and I was so proud that I'd like found an artisanal market for us to go see. And I was like, Jonica, this is like a must see on TripAdvisor. We got to go. This is one of those avoid TripAdvisor moments I learned. We got there and it was nothing as described in the reviews on TripAdvisor. It wasn't close. The market was not great, right? It wasn't artisanal.
It wasn't traditional at all.
No. Rather than being my dream, which was tropical fruits and hand-woven fabrics and silver jewelry. No.
Like a food court area where you can get, because we were hungry by the time we got there.
That's right. We're looking for food. And nope, we are selling fucking keychains and shot glasses and ponchos and other things that you, and I'll put this in air quotes, you might bring home from a vacation to your friends. This was not in the least bit resembling a market that I had anticipated in my mind.
No.
Not our jam. After learning from this mistake, we continued on to the park La Carolina. As I said, this is a huge park. It's in the middle of town. It has wonderful walking paths. There's two man-made ponds that have paddle boats in them that look like geese. They're like
It's like when you go to Silver Lake and you get in the geese paddle boat.
Or Central Park, like the rowboats, right? Like it's that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's food stalls. This is very common throughout Central America, as well as South America, and even in parts of Europe, where there's fitness equipment. Even in Chinatown, in New York, they have this weight-resistant fitness equipment, so you can do sit-ups, and you can do squats, and there's this, it's all your own personal weight. So that they had those things. They had kitschy children's carnival games. In fact, we came across one, and Jonica has some great video from this and photos. It was a stand, maybe like 8 feet by 8 feet, I guess, and it has on it all these objects like baseball cards and candy bars and stickers, and the kids are invited to pick up a loaded live BB gun and shoot at the objects from like 5 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
And if they hit the objects, then they get to go over and pull it off the wall or get it out of a basket before they reload it onto the wall. So these kids are firing off a live BB gun at packs of like baseball cards. Jonica and I are amazed at this because it's sort of what you'd see at the state fair, but without any regulation.
Those are normally just air guns, right?
Yes. Yep.
And they're like attached to a cord even then. This kid could have like turned around and just started like shooting whoever.
you could have walked away with the BB gun. Yeah, it wasn't as though this was regulated whatsoever.
It was amazing to see. Classic.
There was lots in the park to do, including there was a decommissioned airplane that they had put up to sort of provide shade. And there was a children's birthday party that was happening under the day we were there. And they got some sort of clown show or balloon show or something.
There was a lot.
It was a great place to relax in the city. And even though there was no power, everybody seemed to be out. Everybody seemed to be enjoying the park.
Or bouncy houses.
Yeah, like, it's great.
Just everything. Yeah. Anything and everything. It was a great thing to experience and observe, especially when you have, as Mark said, no power. I think we did go to the mall after that, which coincidentally did have power.
We went to the mall for sure.
Just, I don't know, we needed something, but we're like air conditioning and power for a little bit. That's fantastic. Anyway, after a few days in Quito, we headed back out to the airport to pick up our rental car. And our first stop was going to be Baños.
We're doing a road trip, just to be clear.
Sorry, yes. We're going to go tour around after a 3.5-hour drive passing Cotopaxi, which, if you know now, has become a very popular, I don't know, luggage, would you call it? Trekking gear. They make fanny packs and duffels and backpacks.
I have a couple of those. Big in Brooklyn.
They're very colorful. They're beautiful. We had no idea that Cotopaxi was actually a volcanic mountain.
It's a 15,000-foot peak mountain.
Yes. But we drove past it, and it was very impressive. We didn't stop. We went directly to our hotel, which was a quick 10-minute walk right outside of, I'm using air quotes right now, downtown Baños. There was not a lot of accommodation options. So we did not have very high hopes. Would you agree?
No. It was one of the towns where you're like, either you're going to get a hostel with some backpackers or you're going to pay way too much for something that's going to fall below the standards.
Yeah, I feel like we tried to do the middle ground.
Yeah.
But we got to our Airbnb and it was worse, I think, than we thought that it was going to be. It looked a lot like, I don't know if people know the term, like a love motel.
Yeah.
I can't wait for you to describe this. What is a love motel for?
A love motel may be where a couple are going to rekindle their love for one another in the privacy of a mountain getaway, or it could be a short-term place where you're not going very long because you're living in a religious country.
Yeah, it's part of the culture here, right? And I mean, there are also these obviously all over the world, but people in Latin America tend to live with their parents for a very long time until they get married. But if they want to experience something with their lover, a lot of times they will rent a room in these love motels, and our room at this Airbnb looked a lot.
All the signs pointed to yes.
Yes. The furniture was all red pleather. There was a sunken tub in the living space, which also doubled as the shower. It was very interesting. There was a painting too. Wasn't there kind of like
Venus.
A sexual painting?
It was Venus. Fan on the wall. Everything here pointed to Greek love palace, and it was far from that.
Oh, God.
And I don't know how we found ourselves in this location.
We knew it wasn't going to be amazing, right? Like,
that's right.
That was not a question.
The price point didn't guarantee us anything real hot.
No. But the photos helped them a lot.
You just walked in and you knew a lot of people have enjoyed themselves in this room. And I don't think that's...
We did not.
I don't think that's what it's used for anymore. And we were the only ones there.
I don't know what benefits you thought that we were reaping, but that's super cute.
The irony of this whole situation is that we were the only people at this hotel as well. And there was more modern rooms that were really clean, different color palette. Not to be picky, but I was like, Jonica, can we go and just ask to be upgraded to one of these rooms? Because the one we are in clearly is not current day. You knew what was going on. You walked in, you saw the painting of Venus on the wall. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Anyway,
of course, we're still in Ecuador, so we're still facing the same power issues. And the room was incredibly dark, so we left our car and went to walk into town to explore. And Baños was super cool. Actually, we didn't have high hopes, but there was a lot of bars and restaurants and people actually walking around.
It's a small town in the base of a mountain valley. So it's like wedged in between two huge valley, like ridges. It's great.
Yeah. We had a decent dinner. And while we were eating, the power came back on. So everyone started cheering because the town like finally lit up. And after that, we went and grabbed like an amazing cocktail, actually, at a very cute place. And then headed back to our love hotel to find our room full of flies. Like, incredibly full of
flies. We couldn't figure this out because we didn't leave windows open or anything. So, and the doors were not left ajar. I couldn't figure out how this happened, but several flies had come in.
It just kept getting better. The next day, we hiked up to one of the many hills that overlook the town. It was hot. It was steep, but it wasn't too bad. It was a nice hike. And at the top, there's this crazy, super bizarre Instagram-type park that's been built. So there, of course, is the giant swing and the big hands and signs.
The hearts. But, there was definitely hearts.
Yep. But the strangest thing is that there were also gnomes or elves all over the place.
Just for visual, for listeners, when we say like elves and gnomes, like the creepy ones that are under the bridges, like sort
some
of wrinkled.
Some of them just look like
well, they had trolls.
Snow White.
They had little trolls
too. The seven
too.
Dwarves. Yeah.
But like the ones that were creepy were like the fabric of their clothing has been worn away.
Like Gollum.
Yeah, and their faces were scrunched and the hair was really natty and they were sitting everywhere.
So there were like statues of them.
Turn left and right, and there would just be one like with its hand out to you. And they were everywhere. It was all over this whole Instagram place.
Yeah, big statues, small figurines. There was actually a room full of fake gold and this giant elf that you were supposed to kiss.
It was all spray painted gold.
It was crazy. And
there was pictures of people kissing the elf that they'd posted all over the room.
It was the strangest thing ever. And honestly, if you know me, you know it's one of my worst nightmares. I hate gnomes. I hate elves. Farber used to have a lot of them. He'd hide them in our garden and stuff. But
that's another story. These go way back.
They're so gross. This is so weird. It's one of the weirdest places that we've ever stumbled upon. Anyway. We explored the town a bit more. We went to the church, of course. And thank God we found some fly strips that we actually put up all over the room, which we took down before we left because we didn't want to insult them. But we needed some help. The next day, we drove a bit out of town to see the Devil's Cauldron Waterfall. So if you go there, there's two different points of entry to this, and we did them both because we didn't know that there were two, right? So the first one that we went to was not the one that we were expecting. But anyway, you get there and you cross this bridge and you walk down to view the falls a bit closer to the top. It's beautiful. It's amazing. But you're also looking down at the other side, which is where we wanted to be. So we stood there, took some photos, walked out, and we're like, how do we get to the other side? So we got in our car, drove to the other side of town, which has that more famous viewpoint. You walk down all of these stairs, which are actually beautifully made. They kind of look like, we were just talking about elves, but kind of like hobbit stairs. Don't you feel like that?
Yeah, they kind of cascade in like this direction, that direction. And there's little built-in railings and stuff out of concrete. It was a fun descent into the valley of the waterfall.
Yeah, it's steep, but they're very pretty. And if it is the raining season, if you go down these stairs, you will get soaked. We just got misted. It was a lovely mist. It was a warm day. It was very pretty for pictures. But then you can also climb up top and you can squeeze into these very tiny cave passages. At first, I was like, holy shit. I don't know. You have to be very able-bodied, I feel like, to do this because they are very, very small and you can't be claustrophobic. But you get up there, and if you want to, you could actually walk behind the falls. You did a little bit.
I got soaked. Like, no, I got soaked head to toe.
Yeah.
I thought, you can creep in through these canals, these little caves, and like you won't get wet.
Mm-hmm.
I got soaked.
Yeah.
But it's downpour.
But it's beautiful. Very, very beautiful. And I think probably one of the, if not the most famous reason why people go
to Baños.
To Baños, right?
Other than what you'll lead into later with the spa.
Yeah. Well, yes. The spa. That's coming up. Anyway, as we talked about earlier, I have an extreme fear of heights, so I did not go, but Farber, you went paragliding.
This has been a big dream of mine for a long time now.
And Baños is very famous for this as well.
This is
a reason that people go to Baños.
Baños is sort of the Ecuadorian equivalent of New Zealand's Queenstown, right? Mm-hmm. It's like an extreme sports town.
Yep.
So they had paragliding on offer, much more affordable than New Zealand. And so, I was like, I'm signing up for this. And just a quick summary of the experience. They take you out to obviously a mountaintop where you can like, there's a launch pad.
But you booked with like one guy.
I booked
right?
with one guy. Yeah, it was a tandem situation. You can't go by yourself. Obviously, just like skydiving or something, you have to go with somebody the first 300 times or something. Just
300?
Not 300. That's an exaggeration. But you can't just go by yourself. You have to be trained.
Well, it's very dangerous.
So they bring you up to the top of this hill. They drive up there, and you get up there, and the paragliding instructor is a lot like a surf instructor. There's not a lot of detail. There's a lot of like, man, then we fly, man. There's not a lot of safety involved as like, this is what will happen if X, Y, and Z.
Was he local? I forget.
Yep. Okay. He was a local guy. Mm-hmm. And so you have to wait for the currents, the wind, like the wind thermals to be right. Because if it's too windy, you can't go. And if it's not windy enough, you can't get up. So we're sitting, you probably wait for 45 minutes or so before the thermals start to like settle down. And then it's very brief. They tell you like, get into this harness and we're going to go. And the chute opens up and you guys both run. He's like, just run. So we're running. And then you sort of lean back and then it's kind of a chill ride from there. You're in like a little couch. It feels like a little cocoon couch. And he's behind me, obviously strapped to me. But
was it cold?
It was colder. Yes, mm-hmm. It was cold. So, you know, prepare for the weather and the elements off the ground are very different. That comes as no surprise. But it was also a 25 minute ride. It wasn't as though it was, you know.
That's long.
In New Zealand, bungee jumping was literally 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Skydiving is literally like, if you're lucky, 45 seconds to a minute of free fall, maybe a minute and a half if you're higher elevation. But then after that, you're just like parachuting down and it's 15 minutes and it's over. So this was a long ride. It was great. It was very high up. There was a few moments in which I was like, oh, this is high. Like I like these experiences and I was a little nervous, but you get aerial views of the entire area, all the valleys. Yeah, it was a great experience to go paragliding there. I'd do it again. I'd go paragliding anywhere again.
I know, you love it. Good for you.
Anyway, that's my piece.
Yep. On our final day in Banyos, we had booked a whole experience at the El Refugio Spa Garden. They offer a wide range of services, and we wanted to try to experience some different things. So after soaking in some various pools, different temperatures, different thermal pools, and taking in the views of the mountains and the river below, it was time. It was time to experience our treatments. And the first one that we booked was an enema. I have always wanted to do an enema. You were like, okay, yeah, I'll do it too.
There's always been a part of me that wants to have somebody insert a tube in my rectum and squirt warm juice.
Yeah, well, okay, so there we go. So this might be a TMI, but we're going to try to keep it light. You get in basically these hospital robes, and you go into a room, and you lay on your side, and a woman inserts a tube into your bum. And that is connected to almost like a hot water bag, if people know what that is.
It was a literal funnel. It was going to be a funnel, and they poured hot water or warm water into it.
Yeah. It's warm liquid. You don't really know what it is, but there's something warm then that is going up inside of you. And it's crazy because you go through a range of feelings, I think, as this is happening to you. Sometimes you're like, oh, this feels good. Sometimes you feel too full. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes you're like, I'm going to shit the bed. And so finally your body is like, I've had enough. And she can kind of tell too, because I think she can tell by your squirming and maybe how big your stomach is getting. I don't know. She was like, you're done. And I mean, I was like, I'm done.
She may just also know from the quantity that's going in as to what the body can actually retain.
So as soon as you're like, that's enough, you literally jump off the bed and you run across the hall to the toilets. And you sit on the toilet and everything comes out. And for me, at least, I told you, I warned you, because I was like, oh my God, the liquid was red. So I kind of thought, oh, I'm going to die. Like, she's punctured something. I'm internally bleeding. But no, it's this, the water that they put inside of you is filled with herbs. It's like this herbal treatment that they do. And so, yeah, it just cleanses you. Everything comes out. And I don't know, I felt great afterwards. It was amazing.
Honestly, with all joking aside, felt better, healthier, lighter, clearly, because of the experience. I will say you had a...
I can't wait to hear this.
You were able to absorb more fluid during the process.
Yes.
She kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, that's enough. You need to go. And I was like, okay, with pleasure. I'm going, because again, let's just get back to the beginning of this conversation. There was no instruction as to what will happen.
They don't speak English. So it was very hard. And obviously this is not traditional Spanish that like we know what they're saying.
We know conversational. We don't know enema.
No.
Like there was no way to describe in medical terms what was going to happen to you. But the takeaway, I think we both felt great. We just didn't know what was going
to
happen.
Yeah. And the local people tend to do this like once a year, they said. And I fully agree. I would totally do it again. It was an incredible feeling. After that, to transition.
Small segue there.
We did a body mud treatment. And again, I think this is very different depending on where you go. A lot of places have mud treatments. But they brought us into this room. We were alone. And they gave us these two big bowls of very warm mud, and they were like, spread it all over each other and then walk around until it dries. And so that's what we did.
The direction wasn't clear on this one. So we were like, should we put it on ourselves? And they're like, yes. And then they had their large TV in the room too.
Like Carol G music and video started playing.
They put on a bunch of like reggaeton music because that's what locals like to listen to. Because you have to wait for this clay to dry.
Probably took about like 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah. So you walk around and you're walking around. And again, I don't know what the origin of the story, but one wall was an entire mural of just nude women that someone had painted. And one was clearly a man that was turned into a woman because the features were very masculine. And then the other wall was a mirror, like a full length mirror. So the two of us are in here saying, what's going on? We're waiting for...
And there was like three shower stalls too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then you wash it all off in these shower stalls.
If it dries, you have to shower off. And so that's why before you start these treatments, they ask you, are you good with like soaking in the tubs? Because you can't go back.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Once you've mudded up, there's no more treatments you can do.
Yeah. But it was great. It was crazy. It was a weird experience. We both felt great leaving, I feel like. It was extremely affordable.
Yep.
And,
Mark liked that part the most about the spa experience. I think it was very affordable for our services.
Highly, highly recommend.
Clean, cleansed. We were ready.
Pores
extracted all
of everything.
Yeah, we were now on our way, leaving the mountain town of Baños, and we were continuing our road trip going eastwards to the town of Tena, which is where the Amazon jungle sort of takes form in Ecuador. Obviously, the Amazon jungle is massive. It spans several countries. But as far as Ecuador is concerned, this is where it begins. As I said, Tena is located in the northeast region of Ecuador. It borders Colombia and Peru. It's dense jungle territory here in Tena. We made our way to the Tagua Lodge, our resort on the river, where we'd be staying for the next 3 nights. We were looking forward to this. I remember distinctively.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It was a modern, standalone, like a prefab unit. It was an A-frame that cantilevered over a river. And then off the back deck was like this dense jungle. So you have like this river flowing underneath. It was really, we were lucky.
And the resort had a pool, too. Like, it was
right. Yeah. And again, we were the only residents there, aside from one couple that came for a night. So we had the whole place for ourselves. Due to Tena's proximity and location in the mountains, which feed these local rivers that then go into the Amazon, it's a big whitewater rafting territory. So Jonica had looked this up. She's like, we got to go whitewater rafting when we're in Tena. And I was like, okay, deal, of course, I'm for this. So on the first day, we had scheduled this whitewater rafting trip with River People was the company. Mm-hmm. That was like the rafting operator.
Mm-hmm.
And
we had a lot of reviews because I wanted to make sure that we were safe.
Yes.
Because I've never done this before.
That's why it was your first time rafting.
I was scared, yeah.
And the owner, guide, and operator of River People is this guy named Alex, who the two of us were just like sort of confused by him because he had an accent, but you couldn't tell where it was from.
No, we're like, are you Canadian? Like, we had no idea.
Alex and his family actually came to Ecuador 30 years ago from Ireland. The guy doesn't have an Irish accent, but you can't tell what the accent is.
Every now and then he'd say a few things and you'd be like, okay. But for the most part, it was like just this weird amalgamation of like different accents.
And it's because when his family came, they were the first to charter these rapids in the area. So they started the rafting operation and they do kayak tours as well, but they were the first sort of non-Ecuadorians to create a tour group for this type of fun.
Which they worked with, right? And employed and had local people help them as well.
That was sort of my, and I get into it here. Like,
sorry.
No, that's fine. Alex, he did the whole time we were on this tour. He also regaled us with these stories of his 30-year term in Ecuador. And he told us about narco tales, about trafficking through the jungle, and struggles with the recent blackouts because he was trying to run this business and he couldn't because the internet would go out all the time and the government corruption. He had all these really good tales. And you would listen to him and you're not a lame, crazy expatriate that's running away from shit. This is your life. This is why we can't tell where you're from. Like, you're fully immersed in this culture. And he was just a great envoy for us to learn from about Ecuador.
Yeah, he was incredible. And we also had the local guide, right? Alex was in the kayak
he was leading to like view the rapids to make sure there was enough water.
The safety guy.
And our guide was an Ecuadorian guy.
Yeah. And so he was in the raft with us. And he spoke actually very good English. We also would speak Spanish with him, but he'd been doing this forever. He was just this tiny little guy. And he would constantly jump out of the raft to help us through because the water at points, like we said, is not nearly as high as it should be because of the drought and everything. But I don't know. It was a great experience. And I think normally if Ecuador would not have been in the situation that it was, I think they're facing not only the electricity crisis, but tourists aren't going there because people don't want to deal with it. And so they took just the two of us out. Normally they wouldn't do that. I had to email them and be like, well, you go out with just the both of us. But it was a great experience.
Yeah. So after our time in these two small little mountain towns of Baños and Tena, it was time for us to return back up to Quito. So we did a little bit of a loop here between all three places, bringing the car back to the airport before going our separate ways.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
We are back and you are listening to Address Unknown, and we are continuing our time in the South American country of Ecuador. First, I do want to just start this segment off by telling listeners that we are now recording this podcast after almost 16 months together.
That's insane. Well, not 16 months
on the road,
together.
Just on the road, just on this trip.
We only met 16 months ago, you guys.
Almost 16 years, you guys.
Wah, wah. 16 months in 16 years.
So, but like, head to toe together all the time for 16 months. Let's say that. That is a considerable amount of time to be with one person.
So much
time. Let alone with the personalities of myself and, of course, Jonica. So perhaps in earlier episodes, you know, as people listen to specifically Australia, you might have heard there was some frustration in our voices or maybe resentment for one another. And that's because we were stuck in a van. And we were learning, you know, to be with each other every day and every minute, which is a big change from our previous lives before we started this trip, right? We were both working jobs in New York. We were apart all day long. There was much more independence.
I will say, even like before we started this trip, I think like on the podcast, we talked about the fact that we would probably split up and we would probably go our separate ways. But I think Australia, the frustrations maybe spurred that on a bit more, even though it took us a lot longer. This is not a new thing. Like, we've talked about this
before we even
started out.
Exactly. And so we were sort of prepared for this. And in doing so, Jonica decided she would like to go and meet up with her good friend Courtney in Cartagena, Colombia for some beach times. And I was going to head to the coast of Ecuador to attend surf camp. Jonica will talk about this in the next episode.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into my time with Courtney here because we continue on in Colombia. So it feels kind of weird and like, where do you cut this off? But I had times in Colombia, but Mark's going to now talk about his time at surf camp.
Ooh, highlight of the trip so far. So booking a flight.
The whole trip?
Nah, but like for South America.
Pull out the Australia.
Big one for South America, I think. This was a good time. We are in Quito, and I booked a flight from there to Guayaquil, which we discussed before. That's where we had the mishap with the hotel for points.
We went to Guayaquil together.
Yes. I was then on a bus for 3 hours to the Ecuadorian coast because I was making my way to the surf town of Ayampe. It was here that I was staying at the Vistamar Resort, which was founded by an American guy over 10 years ago. And just shout out to Mateo here, who Mateo was this guy who ran the place. And he's like, 10 years ago, I came here. I bought the land. I started camping on it. And he literally lived in this tent, camping on the land until he could establish what it is today. And he built, along with like help from a lot of locals and a lot of friends, this entire resort. And now it's 4 rooms and a yoga center and ancillary house that has more rooms in it. And they offer all sorts of surfing options.
How old is Mateo?
Maybe mid-30s, I'd say.
Okay.
Awesome guy.
And he's from?
He's from Florida.
There you go.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Hopefully he's listening. Mm-hmm. Great time. Anyway, the Vistamar Resort sits less than 2 blocks from one of the area's best surf spots in all of Ecuador. It has unlimited use of surfboards as part of your stay.
Mm-hmm.
You get lessons for free.
Mm-hmm.
There's 3 healthy meals prepared every single day.
God, I hope he's listening and gives you a free trip
after this. Plug, right? And when you're not surfing, they also offer yoga classes that you can attend. There's hiking to nearby mountains. I went for an incredible horseback riding trip without Jonica. I ponied up to do this because they're like, it's in the jungle. And I was like,
guys, I just want everyone to realize and recognize that Farber got on a horse when I wasn't there voluntarily. And he liked it.
It was just this other woman and I and this guy. And the guy's like, caballero, you know horses. And I was like, my wife makes me go on these things. So I'm pretty familiar with them. But I took part in a cacao ceremony. That was awesome, albeit a little hippie.
I was going to say, was it awesome?
I got to take a ride on motocross bikes through the jungle. Just the other guy and I just cruising through all these ravines and roads through rivers and everything. It was awesome.
And all this was included, right?
It was all included.
Yeah, which is insane.
So you're...
I mean, not that it's cheap, right?
No, but you could do a la carte or you could be like, I want everything. And because I was just going by myself, I was like, I don't want to go look for restaurants. I don't want to You can add on these things. So you could add on motocross riding.
If you wanted to do it, but exactly. you did all inclusive.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to
set the stage.
Educate the people.
Yeah. They didn't give me a wristband. It's not like it was an all inclusive hotel in Cancun, but it was the closest thing you get to manpan. And for those who don't know what manpan is, this is the.
You realize 10 men in the world know what manpan is.
Manpanion. Is an annual trip to go snowboarding with a group of friends that I have. And I've been involved twice. They've been going for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a time away from your significant other and the children. It's a time to sort of reconnect as males. It's like a retreat for men. And I didn't get to go this year because we're on this trip. So that was the closest I got.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great time. It was a good time for me to recalibrate, get some much needed self time and rekindle that independence with myself.
Mm. I love that for you. That's so great. I'm going to talk about my woman pan next time. Anyway, let's take another really quick break before we get into our loves and learns for Ecuador. Episode 31 of Address Unknown. All right, Farber, what is your love of Ecuador?
I'm going to keep it short, and I literally just talked about it, but I'm going to come full circle on this. Ayampe Surf Camp was the highlight of Ecuador, and I think the idea of us going separate ways, I wasn't too jazzed on. I didn't see it being necessary. We'll just continue to argue and fight when we don't get along, you know? But this idea of separating... I didn't want to do it. I don't know if this is necessary. Being away alone at this camp fully clarified that this is a necessity for me. And for you, I assume as well, but
100%.
For me, it is you have to.
You have your time.
You have to leave who you are dependent on and with all the time, even if it's in a regular day-to-day work situation. you should still be able to reassert your independence and find yourself and think about yourself and how you view things and how you've changed independently. All of that can only happen if you're by yourself. So that really was something that I learned I did not think was going to be necessary, but certainly was impactful. And for that reason, this is my love.
Perfect. I love that for you. And so what was your learn?
The electricity was just the biggest learning experience for us. I don't think we realized how the expectation of electricity is. Like light switch, sure. Flushing the toilet because you need the power, sure. You learn those things. Like when you're camping, you're like, they're not available. But when it's day in and day out and nothing can operate, the people around you can't operate, the ATMs don't work, you strip this entire country of any tools. So for that, it was just hard. I think for us, it just became like, this is like camping, except it never ends. And it didn't end the mm-hmm. entire time we were in that country. From the moment we booked that hotel in Quito to the time I left on the bus from the Yape Surf Camp to go meet up with you again, the power was an issue. And it, to this day, still is an issue. They have not resolved this problem. So that, as depressing as it sounds, is really the learn, is the electricity issue and like how we take it for granted, clearly.
Can we talk, because we didn't actually go into it, so just a tiny bit of background about like why this is. We said like obviously like the political things, not doing like solar and all of that. So we asked people why else, because we've all seen the movie from 5 million years ago with Kevin Costner.
Say something as simple as like the water shortages of in California and like Colorado. Like, this is very relevant to the United States too.
It's happening and going to keep happening all over the world. So Ecuador was buying their water from Colombia, which has a lot of water. And we'll get into obviously our trip in Colombia, but like we were there and there is plenty of water.
The fountains run, the streams flow. There's plenty of water.
But something happened. We're not exactly sure what happened between Ecuador and Colombia, but Colombia, something happened. And Colombia was like, screw you. We're not selling you water anymore. So that stopped. And then there was another deal in the works between Ecuador and Mexico. And Mexico was like, yeah, we'll sell you water. And they're like, great, amazing. Mexico's a huge country, has a lot of water.
So the person was going to the embassy, the Mexican embassy. Oh,
yeah, he was in Ecuador. He'd done something.
And I don't know if he'd done it in Mexico or in Ecuador.
No.
I don't know.
He would have done it in Ecuador. That's why he went. That's what you do.
We don't have the full story here.
If you fuck up in one country and you're there, you run to your embassy. So he fucked up in Ecuador and ran to the Mexican embassy. And so it was trying to be like, hey, I'm Mexican, save me.
He was seeking asylum.
Yes.
I think he was seeking asylum because he had broken the laws in Ecuador. He was hoping the Mexican government would help him out, extradite him, and get him out of the country.
Yes, exactly.
There we go.
Okay. So anyways, so he goes to the embassy and the Ecuadorians storm the embassy.
The military jumped the walls and pulled him out.
Pull him out, which is illegal, right? So like as a person, you can run to your country's embassy and be safe, right? And like figure until like the courts or whatever figure out what happened. They stormed the embassy right away, pulled him out. Mexico was like, this is totally illegal.
That created a rift between the two countries. And therefore, the water supply was shut off.
And they also pulled everyone out of the embassy.
That's true. All of the people at the embassy and the consulate were removed from Ecuador, and they closed it and has not yet reopened.
Exactly. So there's a lot of strife.
There's some tension between the two countries at the moment, and Ecuador remains without water.
Yes. So sorry. I just wanted to give that little bit of education that we learned.
So that's my learn, guys. Extended with Jonica's input. And yeah, Jonica, what was your love of Ecuador?
Oh my God, she can't catch a break, guys. Surprisingly, I loved the rafting. It was my first time, as I said, and I thought it was super fun. I was terrified. I was so, so terrified. And I know it can be so much more intense, and I know that it can be much more scary than what we experienced. I'm really glad that we didn't tip over, that we didn't get into the water. It was actually really cold.
It was very cold.
Raining when we were there. But it was incredible. I wish we'd seen a few more animals, but that was my love. I really loved it. It was a very unique, cool experience.
Well, I promise not to stop Jonica's learn and advocate for water resources or tell you about any political, context between the governments. But dear, what do you think? What was your learn?
I know, for the first time ever, maybe in 31 episodes, I'm going to build off of your learn. It was scary, I'm going to say, to be in a city, a good sized city in a developing country. I'm just going to say it.
Okay.
That loses power for hours and hours on end. It was not safe. Everyone told us that, like, after dark, when the power went out, that it was not safe to go out. And so, therefore, you just had to sit in the darkness of your hotel room, reading by the light of your Kindle until you fell asleep. But, I mean, the power would go out. It would get dark at, what, 6:30, 7 o'clock?
Mm-hmm.
That's when the power would go out. Who goes to bed at 7 p.m.? Like, that's not a thing.
It was super random. It never consistently went off at the same time or back on at the same time. Yeah. And to Jonica's point, like, there was one night Jonica was like, oh, let's get some soda water or something. We needed something from, like, a convenience store, a bodega, right?
Mm-hmm.
Different term for them in Ecuador, but nonetheless, like, we needed something. So I literally was like, oh, I'll just, like, put a headlamp on and go out. And I walked out the front door. And remember, now the intercom and the fob access to get in don't work anymore.
Mm-mm.
So you can't get back in unless you bang on the door. But I'm leaving. I walk out and it's like, there's no cars. It's pitch black. There's a bunch of sketchy people walking around because no one had, like, not because Ecuadorians are sketchy. These individuals were sketchy.
Yeah, of course.
And there's literally no street light. There's no light from a business. There's no generators running at this hour because it's 8 o'clock at night.
It's pitch black. There's nothing.
It was like...
apocalypse.
It was like an apocalypse. Mm-hmm. It was, in a sense, but we learned from it. I think that overall takeaway of the podcast, the electricity issue for both of us, we just feel empathy for these people. You just cannot. It's just like you can't think of what it's like every single day.
I have no idea. Like, and it gets old, right? Because for us, it's not, I don't even know if it would have mattered, but like after the lights go out at night, so like you have to plan for dinner. Like, what are you going to eat? And you have to eat super early. And it's not like we didn't have a fridge. We didn't have anything. So that was like, I don't know. It's all these, like, as a tourist, stupid things that you have to think of. But these, like, families and these people have to think about it all the time. And I think back to, like, what, the 3 or 4 days that we didn't have power during Sandy. And I'm just like, these people have been dealing with this for months and months and months. And I can't even imagine. So
yeah,
sorry, it had a big impact obviously on both of us, which is why I felt okay to piggyback off of your learn.
I think it was reasonable, and I think we learned a lot about the country while being there, aside from the electrical things, but we also
loved it.
We enjoyed it and had this experience that would not have happened had there been power. It would have been a totally different pass through the country. So
100% with that.
Anyway, guys, we get into
Colombia
in the next episode of 32. We will get into our reuniting after a time away. We cruise through some of Colombia's best cities up into the jungles of the north. We're making our way north.
That's true. We are. All right, until next time. And bye.